You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome to your Canadiens Connection on Rocket Sports Radio. This premier hockey podcast featured at CanadiansConnection.fm brings you the latest news, in-depth analysis, and expert commentary about the NHL's most storied franchise, the Montreal Canadiens. Hosted by Rick Stevens and Amy Johnson. Our team of credentialed journalists provides behind-the-scenes insight on the Canadiens, designed to inform, entertain, and engage Habs fans around the globe. We are proud to be the trusted source for all things Habs for more than a decade. This is the Canadiens Connection Podcast.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Canadiens Connection podcast right here on Rocket Sports Radio, keeping you informed, engaged, and entertained. And we're here to talk about one thing and one thing only, and that is the Montreal Canadiens every single week. So we are glad that you're here with us today. We've got a lot to break down, analyze, take a look at after this week. But first, a round of introductions in case you're new around these parts. My name is Amy Johnson. I'm going to be your host for today's show. This is episode 346 of the Canadiens Connection podcast. This week's episode titled Pass the Torch. Montreal's young core is ready to rise. I'm, of course, pleased to be joined in the studio by my co-host, who is our founder and president here at Rocket Sports. His name is Rick Stevens. And Rick, what a whirlwind the week ended up being.
And you know, for a fan base who supports a team that just got eliminated from the playoffs, fairly upbeat in Montreal.
I think so.
Yeah, the upbeat mood, future is bright kind of talk.
Yeah.
I think, of course, the fan base would have wanted the playoffs to continue. Another Game six back in Montreal would have been welcome. But overall, I think the mood is positive and
ready for training camp to start.
Looking forward to the moves that'll be made in the summer and training camp and getting this exciting team back underway again.
And so really today, we're going to break down, of course, what happened in the last two games of the series that took place between last week's episode and this week's episode. We've got a slew of injuries to update you on. Of course, everyone comes clean with what they've been battling with once the season is over. So we'll get you updated on some roster news, some injury reports. There is still Habs-related hockey happening, however. We're going to talk to you about how the prospects are doing in the AHL and the ECHL, because both of those franchises are still in their playoff contention. Get you through some notes around the NHL, all happening in the first segment. Then in the second segment, what are we really talking about today? We are talking about how the Canadiens must move from placeholders to playmakers starting this summer. So yes, we're going to talk about how the season ended and how it wrapped up, but our focus is going to be on now what needs to take place this summer to define the next phase of what the Canadiens are trying to do and to set them up for next season and for many seasons thereafter. So we're going to talk about what is in store in the off season, the strategies that should be taking place. We're going to hear from a lot of players throughout that segment as well. A lot of interesting stuff. As Rick said, it's an exciting time, but it is a crucial time this summer in the off season for the Canadiens management.
Absolutely a crucial summer. for Kent Hughes, Jeff Gordon, the Montreal Canadiens. And so as, if you don't know, we don't go anywhere in the summer. We're here. We're here every week. And we're going to be covering this crucial summer. So do yourselves a favor, make sure to subscribe and stick with us over the summer. And while you're mowing the lawn, take us to the beach, wherever you're going this summer, bring us along.
Absolutely. Also, be sure we love that this is an interactive podcast. We love to hear from our listeners and our viewers if you happen to be watching on our YouTube channel. And so if you would like to drop us a comment, ask a question, or put in your response to our weekly fan question of the week, of which we take the best responses and read them out on the next show, the best way for you to be in touch with us at any time, 24/7, is on our Rocket Sports text line. You can reach us at 5853-ROCKET. Again, that's 5853-ROCKET. You could subscribe to our YouTube channel and drop a comment on YouTube. That's at insidethecanadians.com. And you can also follow at Habs Connection on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Drop us a reply or a DM there. All right. So first off, let's take a look at how things wrapped up this week, because it was there were nail biters. We said that last week that there were going to be some nail biters, and absolutely, it was a little anxious at times. Game four was back in Montreal, with the Canadiens actually leading in that game until. We're going to talk about this later. What was a very pivotal moment was when Tom Wilson laid a big old hit on Alex Carrier. And that, Rick, really seemed to, we talked about momentum last week and how you can't rely on momentum, but there are certainly moments where momentum can shift and you can grab hold of it. And the Capitals, I think, did so at this point.
Yeah, this was an interesting game in that the Canadiens were down and scoreless first period. Early in the second, it was Dylan Strom scoring for Washington, but the Canadiens came back with two power play goals, and that was a theme throughout the series. The Canadiens' power play was very, very good, and in no short, you had Demidov, you had Hudson. In fact, Slavkovsky got his second goal of the season on the power play. Then it was Cole Caulfield. Both of those goals, both of those power play goals, assisted by Hudson and Demidov. Demidov, an immediate effect, even though a young player, just being introduced to the National Hockey League and at the most, intense time of the year. Other than the first game in the playoffs, where he took time to feel his way, he made an impact. And of course, Hudson's been doing it all season long. So the Canadiens had the lead in the second period, 2-1. And then it was Alex Ovechkin with just an absolutely vicious headshot, to Jake Evans at the end of that second period. It was ugly. It clearly deserved more than the 2 minutes that Ovechkin got for it. And it could have been very dangerous, especially for someone like Evans, who has a history of concussion issues. But it was only kind of a preview of what was to come, because the Capitals kept targeting Canadiens players, and it was... there's sometimes it's kind of hard to put your finger on the turning point of a game or a turning point of a series. This was clear. This was absolutely crystal clear. It was Tom Wilson just laying out Alex Carrier in what could have been called charging at the very least. And Carrier was obviously shaken. And it went, I should say, it went unpenalized. That was a mistake. And 15 seconds or so later, it was Brandon Duhaime got the tying goal. And that really seemed to rattle the Canadians. Mangiapane got the go-ahead goal and then a couple of empty netters. And Marty, I think there's consensus on this, made a mistake. But first, he made a big mistake in pulling his goalie before the Canadians had possession and a quick empty net goal by the Capitals. And it was over. It was absolutely over. It was the as I said, the turning point in the series. And yes, there was still another game to be played in Washington, but I think everybody knew that it was over, including Marty St. Louis, who I've never heard a coach say something like this before, especially during a playoff series, especially when there was games left to be played. And his quote
after the game
was, quote, "I feel a bit bad for the group. I don't really know what to say to them. If you have any answers for them, let me know." End of quote. Wow.
Thanks, coach.
My goodness. He was exasperated. Of course, he saw the writing on the wall that it was going to be difficult for the Canadians to come back or to do anything else or to win another game. But he was throwing in the, I've never, ever seen that before from a head coach. And listen, with all due respect, Marty, it was Marty's first experience as head coach in the playoffs, and he had lessons to learn as well, in terms of preparing his team, in terms of the decisions, the in-game decisions that he made, the adjustments that he made, and then how he spoke to his team and the media after the game, and let's hope it's something that is going to be something on his mind this summer when he's thinking about how he can improve for next season.
That, of course, then led us to game five back in Washington, and honestly, a valiant effort for Montreal to at least get a goal on the board, but Washington certainly felt at home in their own barn. They went up early. They stayed up, and there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, the Canadians played an okay game, but there just wasn't a whole lot of fight there. Dobesh was very good in net. He was solid. He had, keep in mind, we weren't sure for game four whether or not Sam Montembeau was going to play or not, or Logan Thompson for that matter. Logan Thompson did play. Sam Montembeau did not. It was Jakub Dobesh for the final two starts, and he did a pretty valiant effort, given the fact that the Canadians couldn't score in front of him.
Yeah, the Canadians with, especially in the games that they lost, there was just no offense to be had, particularly no 5-on-5 offense in the four game three goals via 5-on-5 offense in the four games that they lost. But Dobesh, the Canadians did not lose because of goaltending. He made spectacular save after spectacular save in game five. Mm-hmm. He did everything possible to keep the game close. Washington scored on two power plays. He was sensational in game five. The only goal scored was a third period goal, an early third period goal by Emil Heinemann for Montreal, and they just didn't have, this was the only game that wasn't close, that the Canadians didn't pull within a goal or so. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as I said, clearly over after game four.
And that meant that the Capitals won the series in five games. They defeated Montreal 4-1. And some interesting audio from the Capitals dressing room after the series was over, on a number of levels, from Spencer Carberry, some of the players as well. Rick, there was Anthony Beauvillier really kind of summed up what it was that the Capitals had as their mission when it came to that final game.
And I get it. Most fans, who cares about the Caps? We don't want to hear audio from them. We don't care what they think. But if you're going to correct some of the mistakes, if you're going to address the strategy of the team that beat you, then you have to know what their strategy was. And Beauvillier kind of opened the curtain a bit and said that this was their strategy, quote, "We really had to contain their best players, their top line and the defensemen who are going to join the attack." So Spencer Carberry said he was concerned about the top line. And he said that it had been one of the top lines in the NHL, that being the Suzuki line, since the Four Nations tournament. Beauvillier goes on, and so Beauvillier was obviously talking about the top line and the defenseman who was going to join, okay, Lane Hudson. He goes on, "That was really the game plan, honestly, to try to slow them down, to be as physical as possible on our forecheck, and to limit the turnovers that would give them an opportunity to restart their attacks." So it was to hit them as often as they could, slow them down, and not only hit them, but to intimidate them to make sure that they would think about, you know, when they were making their play, make them aware that they were going to be hit every time they touched the puck. And then Beauvillier went on to say, to answer the question, what was the turning point of this series? He said Tom Wilson's check on Alex Carrier, they saw as the turning point. Brandon Duhaime's goal came right after, and it gave us a lot of momentum. So I think that that's something that the Canadians have to address in the offseason, that they have to figure out ways of combating a team. Like, not every team in the playoffs is like Washington. Washington is very, very physical, but the Canadians have to have ways of countering that. And one of the ways is having a more complete lineup so that all the focus isn't just on the top line.
And that's, you know, we're going to hear from Nick Suzuki a little later on, and he's going to speak to some of that as well. There are definitely, while there were exciting moments and there were positive things that we saw out there on the ice, there were also a lot of really obvious weaknesses and places, as you say, things that need to be shored up going into next season. So that meant on Friday, it was exit interview day, for players to, clean out the dressing room and have their exit interviews. And of course, one of the big things that happens at that time is all of the injuries are unveiled that had not been discussed prior to that. We found out why Patrick Laine had been out for the last three games of the series. He broke his finger in game two.
Fractured finger in game two. And so that's why he was, he said it came from, a slash. Mm. And then he didn't play the third period and then was out, shooting, after that.
Shooting was impossible.
Yeah. But he was also asked, did you have any issues prior to that? Because, you know, people had noticed that for the last month or a few weeks anyway, you know, his power play contributions had dried up, his shooting accuracy was off, he was slow on the ice, and he said no, he wasn't injured at all before breaking his finger. So I think that should be a little bit concerning for Canadians fans, and maybe conditioning was an issue because you know, he joined the team after the rehab in December. He talked about his knee injury, saying he was glad that he didn't have the surgery. And that came only after a third opinion. The first two doctors told him that he should get surgery. The third one said, no, don't worry about it, just rehab is fine. And but, you know, did it cause his what we saw is he seemed to slow down And there still isn't any explanation for what happened to his shot and his accuracy and his effectiveness. But basically, he said the season was a success. He doesn't put an emphasis on stats. It was just that he needed to find again his joy for playing the game, and he did that. He felt a spark again. He enjoyed playing with the group. Mm-hmm. He said it was fantastic. He loved the crowd. He loved playing in Montreal. He was asked, what about the coach? It must have been fantastic to have the influence. And he said, well, it was more the group that he liked. Yeah. That was all interesting. And we'll have to, we'll talk more about Patrick Laine a little bit later.
For Sam Montembeau, the reason he was out, though, well, the reason he left in the midst of game three and then did not return to the series again, a groin tear early in the second period of game three.
And if you can imagine, that's not a good thing for goaltenders.
No.
Groin strains, maybe. Groin tears, no. And he was very specific. It was two of the three groin muscles he tore.
Ow.
And he was also specific in saying it was in game three in the second period, a shot by Ryan Leonard that caused the issue. And then he gave up another goal after that and came out. And that's when Dobish went in. He said there's no need for surgery. The doctors say a couple weeks of rest and rehab will get him fixed up. So that's the end of that.
Brendan Gallagher, just playing with a broken rib. That's all.
Yeah, tough on the breathing.
Yeah, I was gonna say that breathing probably felt real good.
And dealing with pain, but yes, a broken rib.
Josh Anderson, however, did not want to go into his injuries, plural. Had upper body injuries and lower body injuries, so injuries all around, but just did not want to line item them. But did say he won't need surgery, Rick.
Yeah, I think that's the most important. He said he's been dealing with these for much of the season, that if the Canadians had clinched earlier a playoff spot, he definitely would have sat out a few games. But the important part is he won't need surgery.
Alex Carrier, of course, was asked how his head was after taking that hit from Tom Wilson. He said, quote, his head is fine, but he did have a lower body injury.
Yeah, folks made a lot of this because there was a Sportsnet reporter that posted a photo of Carrier with an ice pack wrapped to his ankle. He injured his ankle. That's when Alex Ovechkin went after him and missed him and went kind of half over the boards. But Ovechkin, the leg caught and so he had an ankle injury, wrapped it with ice. If you're in a locker room, playoffs or not, you see this all the time with ice bags on being taped to different parts of
quads, elbows,
everywhere.
Calves, you name it.
So that was, nothing to get alarmed at there. And it should be said that other defensemen have played with worse. I found it interesting. John Cooper said that Victor Hedman broke his foot in game four of Tampa's series against Florida. He played the next game and picked up two assists.
With a broken foot. Speaking of broken bones, Yoel Armia, he's just had a broken left hand since almost the middle of February.
February 11th against Vancouver, he broke his hand. And we talked about this on the podcast several episodes ago that it was obvious that he just couldn't do anything with his hands. And Marty was asked about it, and he said, listen, he's always in the right place at the right time, and so he couldn't take him out of the lineup. But yes, give him a break. because he's been dealing with a broken hand for a couple of months, 17 regular season games, 5 playoff games with a broken left hand. That's remarkable. Stick tap to Yoel Armia.
And it should be noted that the other thing that he did talk about in his exit interview with the press is that, yes, he and the Canadians have begun contract talks.
Well, keep in mind, he is one of the pending unrestricted free agents. Some question whether he'll stay or go. He said he'd love to stay. He loves playing in Montreal. Not the most emotive guy in the roster. So it's hard, you know, I think people underestimate him sometimes, but he wants to stay, and contract talks have already started. So we'll see how that goes.
While there are no actual specifics on injuries, the captain, Nick Suzuki, admitted that he also pretty banged up overall, and actually probably would have liked if the Canadians had clinched a playoff spot a little earlier.
Yeah, he said he would have sacrificed his Ironman streak and sat out some games if the Canadians had clinched, because he was really feeling banged up would have appreciated the rest going into the playoffs.
All right, so that's the injury news. The other big thing, of course, that all the reporters were clamoring to ask specific players was whether or not players were going to play for their home country to represent at the World Hockey Championship. One of them is an absolute yes, and that was Mike Matheson, who says he will play for Team Canada.
Yeah, there's definite yeses. Matheson's the only one. A definite no. That's Juraj Slafkovský, will not play for Slovakia. He did participate last year and kind of hinted that might have been a reason for his slow start. So he wants to put all his focus in the summer on getting ready for training camp and starting on time.
He said he had a long conversation with Mira Shatan about it, and they came kind of to the, you know, Mira Shatan said, it'll be okay. We'll be all right without you.
The other is kind of maybe. Suzuki said it's going to depend on medical clearance from the Canadians. As we just said, he's banged up. Caulfield and Hudson. Hudson said, I've played a lot of hockey. So there's no decision from Caulfield and Hudson. Of course, they'd be playing for the U.S. side. They're going to be thinking about it over the next few days.
Now, you remember the conversation. This is just a quick aside for us to probably talk about a little later when decisions on these things are made from these few players. But remember, there was a big kerfuffle about selections for the Four Nations tournament based off of who had or had not accepted invitations to last year's World Hockey Championship and who decided to rest and who had. So I'll be interested to see what decisions actually get made, aside from whether or not, you know, in Suzuki's case, it's a medical clearance thing. But who will play, who will go and who won't, depending on who wants to participate in a future Four Nations and How will that snowball progress, I think, will be interesting.
And the GMs from both Team Canada and the U.S. team have said that accepting an invitation to represent your country to the world is key to making, whether it was Four Nations or this is an Olympic year.
The Olympic team.
And
right.
Suzuki talked about how important it's been, a dream since he was a kid to play in the Olympics. Caulfield went last year and still didn't make the team.
Yeah.
And so what's it, how are the decisions going to be arrived at? And will the declining, the invitation have any effect on being part of the Olympics? We'll have to see.
Absolutely. I think that will be something interesting to keep an eye on. Also, there was some roster movement on Saturday. Now that the Rocket are back from their road trip to start their playoff series, goaltender Caden Primeau and forward Oliver Kapanen both sent down to the Laval Rocket to join them for their Calder Cup playoff run. So keep an eye on that for sure.
Some fans might have been expecting more than just those two. We had talked about the number of players who had been papered, you know, the term, at the trade deadline so that they would be eligible to join Lavelle. Mm-hmm. But this makes sense, makes a lot of sense to me. It was only Saturday that they announced this. There was no sense announcing it earlier or sending them down earlier because the Rocket were in Cleveland. So now that they're on their way back, those two players can go. Caden Primo will be able to get back there, and that'll sort out both Lavelle's and Trois-Rivières' goalie situation. And Oliver Kapanen's going to have a role in the top six. He'll be a big addition to that playoff run for the Lavelle Rocket.
That's right. And yes, Lavelle then subsequently sent goaltender Luke Cavallin back down to Trois-Rivières with Caden Primo on his way. One last thing we should mention in this section is that with the Canadiens exiting the playoffs at this stage and their record in the regular season, they will have the 17th overall pick in the first round of the 2025 NHL draft.
At least the 17th pick. They will likely have, two first round picks. They will likely have Calgary's pick. That would be the 16th pick. That was obtained in the Monahan trade. But it depends on whether Calgary wins the draft lottery, and we'll talk about that later, and why Canadiens fans should be watching the draft lottery, because there could be an impact. Mm-hmm. But most likely is that the Canadiens will get the 16th and 17th pick in the first round. And then a pile of picks. They have two second round picks, three third round picks, two fourth, one fifth, one sixth, and a seventh. So 12 picks overall in this draft. It's an important draft because I hate to break it to you, the rebuild's still on.
Yeah, it is. We'll talk about that more in a moment. But first, let's just take a quick dive into the Habs Prospect Report.
It's time for the Rocket Report. The Rocket Sports Media Team is your premier source for information about the Laval Rocket, the AHL affiliate of the Montreal Canadiens, as well as Habs prospects playing in the CHL, NCAA, and leagues around the world.
We'll make this a quick little dip into the Habs prospect report this week. Just want to get you up to speed on the playoff runs that the Canadiens AHL and ECHL affiliates are currently in. Laval did kick off their division semifinal series against the Cleveland Monsters this week. This is the North Division semifinals. This is a best of five series, so a team needs to win three games to advance. And so far, it has been all Laval all the time. Interestingly enough, it's a best of five series. So Laval being the top team in the AHL at the end of the regular season, obviously they're going to have home ice advantage throughout the series. However, they started the series on the road, two games in Cleveland, and then coming home to play three games in Montreal, if necessary. And the way it's going, I don't know that they're going to play five games in total, because Laval won both of their games in Cleveland. The first one, they beat the Monsters 3-2 in overtime. And Rick, it was the Habs prospects who were all over the goal scoring in this one.
Sean Farrell, who some fans were ready to give up on, has been great the second half of the season. He had two goals. Owen Beck playing a little more on the wing, although getting in for his strong side faceoffs. It was Laval winning this game. And yes, Laval has home ice, being the best team in the AHL this season. But the way it works is in the five-game series is a 2-3, the 2-3 format. So that Laval gets three games. It's all about travel costs. Mm-hmm. So it started in Cleveland this time.
And then that led to a, that was on Wednesday night. Oddly, it was Laval's game one of their playoff series was on Montreal's game five night. So that was quite a battle of the TV watching. Friday night was game two for Laval in Cleveland. Keep in mind, with Caden Primo up backing up Jakub Dobish for the Montreal Canadiens, it has been the Jacob Fowler show in net. This has been some great experience for him. So he obviously backstopped Laval to that overtime victory on Wednesday, and then gets his first shutout as an AHL goaltender with Laval beating Cleveland on Friday night 4-0. They have a 2-0 series lead before they've even played a single game at Place Bell.
So Jacob Fowler, his AHL playoff career with 2 wins to start, including a shutout. And look what happened there. You know, it could have upended the organization with Sam Montembeau, and there's always the spill down effects in these things that... you know, Sam Montembeau gets the injury, so that means Dobish is the starter. Caden Primo gets recalled. Caden Primo, who had a sensational run for Laval, and now what's Laval going to do? Well, they get to turn it over to the Canadiens' future in Jacob Fowler. And so Pascal Vincent was able to say, you know what, quote, our goalie isn't even a concern for us right now.
It's a nice problem not to have.
Yeah. So he said, he went on to say, I'm getting to know him. That is Fowler. He's the kind of individual who has the personality to play in these moments. He's very comfortable, very confident, not cocky, but confident in his abilities. He's won big games in the past, and I don't feel he's too nervous. Lucas Condotta was a little more effusive in his praise and said, he's a fantastic goalie and human being. We're very excited for him. We think he's ready. After the shutout, our own Chris G posted this quote from Pascal Vincent on Jacob Fowler. And Vincent said, Fowler is a good goalie. He's a good person. He's a good teammate. They played well in front of him, but he still made some very good saves. He's very calm. He looks comfortable in the net. He doesn't look like a young goaltender. And I think that's the most important part, is that he's calm. He doesn't look like a young goaltender. And that gives confidence to the team in front of him.
Absolutely. So Laval continues their series. They have the opportunity to sweep the series with their next game, which is Sunday in Laval. And so we'll see if Cleveland has an answer for them or not. Trois-Rivières, the ECHL affiliate of the Montreal Canadiens, has moved on to their second series. They are in their North Division finals in the Kelly Cup playoffs. They are facing the Norfolk Admirals in that series. And it was Trois-Rivières with a shutout in game one, winning it just 1-0.
This is fascinating to me. This is fascinating. Again, I talked about this whole domino effect with goaltenders. So Trois-Rivières, very important. These are now the North Division finals, and they lose their goaltender because the Rocket lost theirs because the Canadian. So you had said Luke Cavallin had got called up to the Rocket to back up Fowler. So Hunter Jones goes in and pitches a shutout. with Joe Verbeek, you remember that name, backing up.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. You need depth on your team. You need depth in the organization. And Vinny Riondo, you're doing wonderful things by making sure there's folks in the organization to back up when necessary.
Absolutely. So game two of that series is set for Sunday, May 4th at Colisée Videotron. And so we wish the Trois-Rivières Lions much luck as their series continues. And next year, they're going to be joined in the ECHL by another new franchise. The ECHL Board of Governors approved an expansion application for the league's 31st team, which will begin play not this coming season, but the next, the 2026-27 season. And Rick, where will this team be formed?
Rio Rancho, New Mexico.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty exciting.
It'll be a Dallas Stars affiliate.
A Dallas Stars affiliate. They have a 7,000-seat arena all ready to go. And, a New Mexico team. Why not? 31st team. ECHL is trying to get to 32. And by the time they do, the NHL will probably expand. But so that everyone has their own affiliate. And I think this is... I'm excited to see, you know, there's some fabulous names in the ECHL and what their colors are, their logo, their uniforms, all of that. It'll be kind of fun.
Absolutely. So we'll keep tabs on what's going on with Laval and Trois-Rivières as their playoff series continue. We mentioned the NHL draft lottery a moment ago. So as we move into notes from around the NHL, we should note that this coming Monday is the 2025 NHL draft lottery. And it is something that Canadians fans the last few years have been glued to the draft lottery coverage to see, you know, are they going to get the first overall pick? Are they going to be in the top three or the top five? Maybe that's not necessarily, a reason for you to watch this year since the Canadians had some success towards the end of the season and made the playoffs, but it will definitely still be, I think, must-watch TV, Rick, and it will be a little different this year.
You're going to be cheering for Calgary not to win the draft lottery because otherwise Montreal will get Florida's pick. So you want anybody but Calgary to win the draft lottery. And it is going to be different, as you mentioned, for the very first time in the 30-year history of the NHL, the draft lottery will be shown live in studio. And you say, wait a minute, I remember there's GMs sitting there and the cards get flipped and we go from 16 to 1. Isn't that live? Well, yeah, except that the whole computer spitting the balls out, that ball machine and all of that has already happened in a locked space mm-hmm. with the accountants and some scrutineers. And then they just make up the cards and they run the reporting of it live, but they've never showed the behind the scenes stuff before. And that's mostly because it's a little bit complicated and they've always, for transparency purposes, put it out on YouTube and me and four other people watch the entire process. I watch it every year and there's nobody watches it because it's boring and complicated, and you got to have your lookup tables ready. And so if you go to NHL.com, you can find the 2025 NHL Draft Lottery lookup table. And there are a dozen or so pages of codes, and it's boring. and what happens is four balls are ejected by the machine to give a code, a number. And those numbers are, the lookup tables have every possible combination of those four numbers, and they're tied to a team. So that's what happens. The balls come up, the code comes out, and somebody has to manually go through, okay, which team does this match up with? Maybe not exciting TV, but they're going to try it. And the other thing is...
But our resident math nerd...
Well, that's the thing, right? And they do it twice anyway. But the other thing that happens is that you'll go from pick one all the way through pick 16. So before it was creating the drama, okay, 16 and working up to one. No, you're going to know the first overall pick right away. Right away after the second draw. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand how this is going to.
And then you shut your TV off, unless you're one of those teams. That,
yeah.
I don't know how it's going to work.
I don't know how it's going to work
know,
either.
You know, it's going to be a challenge for the networks and their graphics teams to make this understandable and exciting. But they're going to try it. And I give them credit for that.
Well, as a former television producer, I totally feel sorry for whoever's producing the TV coverage of this, because I'm sure they're pulling their hair out thinking, how am I going to retain viewership? If it'll be interesting, that's for sure.
That's Monday, by the way.
That's Monday. Friday, this past Friday, the Rangers announced Peter Laviolette's replacement. Mike Sullivan is the new head coach of the New York Rangers.
Didn't take long. He wasn't out of work long. No. Not a big surprise. Experienced coach. He's a good coach. And Chris Drury snapped him up, and Mike Sullivan will lead the Rangers. There are four teams still don't have a coach. Anaheim, Pittsburgh, Seattle, and Vancouver. Rick Tocchet is not returning to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. There are three teams that also have interim coaches. They finish the season with interim coaches. So what are they going to do? Are they going to promote remove the interim tag? That's the Bruins, Blackhawks, and Flyers. Or are they going to, the Flyers are going to get talking, aren't they?
Fingers crossed.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. So the coaching carousel is going to continue for the next few weeks.
All right. As the NHL did last year, and they kind of alluded to the fact that they're kind of revamping the way that the NHL awards show and presentation and so forth is going to be done. They have been putting out the finalists for some of the awards and trophies. And so we've got some more of those to update you on this week. The Selke Trophy finalists, Alexander Barkov, Anthony Cirelli, and Sam Reinhart.
All from the state of Florida. You got two Panthers and a Lightning in that list. We talked about the overall league-wide nomination, so you don't have a Canadian in that group.
For the Masterton Memorial Trophy, it is Marc-Andre Fleury, Gabriel Landeskog, and Sean Monahan.
Some very good, compelling stories there.
Actually don't have a favorite of those three. I think that's going to be a tough one to pick.
Josh Anderson, as you'll remember, was the Canadiens nominee. He didn't make the final.
No, he did not. And for the Jack Adams, Spencer Carberry, Scott Arneil, this is for the league's best coach. And I think maybe some of us were a little surprised to see Marty St. Louis as a finalist.
Yeah, you have the President's Trophy winning coach there. The two coaches with the top records in the National Hockey League, Winnipeg and Washington, that being Scott Arneil and Spencer Carberry, and Marty managed to get the Canadiens squeaking into the playoffs, which was a feat in itself, given where the Canadiens were in December. So we understand the reason why he was included on the broader list, but good for Marty that he's now one of the finalists. This award is voted on by the NHL broadcasters, which there'd be a lot of love there for Marty St. Louis. There's also some wonderful stories, one in Calgary, Jim Montgomery in St. Louis, Dean mm-hmm. Evason in Columbus. But a big market like Montreal is going to help a Marty St. Louis. I don't know that he's going to be a finalist up against those, a winner up against those other two finalists, but a feather in his cap anyway.
Absolutely. So we will see, and good luck to him. The finalists for the Calder, which is the Rookie of the Year trophy, are going to be announced on Monday, and I'm pretty sure that Lane Hutson is going to be...
Oh, just announce the winner just on Monday. Never mind the finalists. Announce the winner.
Gonna have to wait. You're gonna have to wait. All of you, however, are not gonna have to wait too long for us to sink our teeth into this week's big topic, the Canadiens needing to move from placeholders to playmakers starting this summer. It's time to dig into what's happened at the end of this season and the critical phase that the Canadiens are now entering in this offseason. First, we are going to take a quick break, hear from our sponsors and friends over at DraftKings. And then on the other side of that, we're going to talk about what happens next for the Montreal Canadiens. You don't want to miss it. So stay with us. You are listening to the Canadiens Connection podcast on Rocket Sports Radio.
Ready to win some real cash during the basketball playoffs? Check out Pick 6 from DraftKings. When it comes to basketball payouts, DraftKings Pick 6 posterizes the competition, including prize picks. Hit all your picks and score higher minimum payouts on Pick 6, plus even more cash if you outscore the competition. Pick 6 is available in most states, including Missouri, California, Texas, Georgia, and more. New players get $50 in Pick 6 credits instantly on just a $5 entry. So download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to play $5, get $50 in Pick 6 credits. Better payouts, bigger wins. Only with Pick 6 from DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 credits that expire in 14 days. Limited time offer. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
And welcome back to the Canadiens Connection podcast here on Rocket Sports Radio. Once again, my name is Amy Johnson. We're glad that you're with us today. Got a lot to talk about in this segment for our big topic. Canadiens must move from placeholders to playmakers starting this summer. If you would like to follow me on X, you can do so at Flyers Rule, which is my handle. And of course, I am joined in the studio with our president and founder here at Rocket Sports, my co-host, Rick Stevens. You'll want to be sure you're following him on X as well. You can find his handle at Rocket Sports. That's a vital one for you to follow because that's where all of our content comes out, at Rocket Sports. It's our main account. But you can also reach Rick there as well. But you'll get links to all of our written content, to our podcast, to our YouTube videos, all of it, and all of our Canadiens updates, Laval updates, all of that type of thing. So be sure you are following. Be sure you are subscribed to the podcast, as Rick talked about at the top of the show. Be sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel over at InsideTheCanadiens.com. And also, if you have the opportunity to do so, why don't you leave us a review? Leave us a like if you're on YouTube and hit share. Whatever platform you are listening or watching right now, just hit share so that some of your friends who are also Habs fans can find our show as well. Now, you know, with the elimination from the playoffs and ending the 2024-25 season for the Montreal Canadiens, Rick mentioned at the top of the show that both players and fans alike, even though it is sad to see things come to an end, overall, everyone does seem to be pretty pleased with the progress made by the team. Especially as Rick said, how they looked in December. Do you remember how they looked at the beginning of the season? I mean, it was dismal. What a turnaround for them and what a way to end the season. And so I think everyone's anxiously looking forward to summer changes that are going to come. Start of training camp in the fall. Gorton and Hughes took the time on Friday, as we mentioned, to do the exit meetings with all of the players. They won't speak to the media until Monday. So again, be sure you're subscribed to the podcast because we'll be breaking down management's end of season debrief next week on the show. So they'll conduct a review of the season that just has wrapped up. And then those two have to really start their off-season strategy. They've got contracts to talk about with their own players. They've got the NHL draft coming up. And Rick, they also have free agency to think about. And all three of those things are going to play really, I mean, those are all important things every year, but it's vital that they get all three elements right this year.
It is. And this is absolutely a crucial period in the rebuild. The management, they've been saying that they want to stick to their plan, veered a little bit away from it around the trade deadline, but they got to stick to the plan this summer. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to make some big splashy free agent signing. It's crucial because they have to stay the course. They have to acknowledge that, you know, squeaking into the playoffs was fun. That's exciting and it's seductive for fans. But you can't get dragged into the trap of wanting to just repeat, oh, we'll just get better with the same group. And they have to go ahead with their strategy in moving from, as we titled this segment, placeholders to playmakers. And that has to be everything that they think about this summer.
So before we dig too deep into that, we're going to start this segment by just reviewing some of the audio that came out of the Canadiens media availability on locker cleanout day on Friday. And naturally, the best place to start is with the captain, Nick Suzuki, and his evaluation of the Habs Capitals series.
I don't know. It's tough to say. Obviously, we'd like to score more, and you know, a lot of other lines had opportunities to score. You know, we had our power play was doing really well, so that kind of counted for a lot of those. So you know, 5-on-5, I thought we could have been better offensively, and that was kind of the biggest reason I thought we lost the series.
The biggest reason we lost the series, according to Nick Suzuki, is their 5-on-5 offense. Canadians, they have an acknowledged potent first line. Spencer Carberry said it. They had to game plan for that first line. They now have the makings of a very good power play, and they have some good pieces throughout the lineup, but they struggle, according to Nick Suzuki, to create 5-on-5 offense. And we know all season that they really struggled to defend in their own end. That was a problem all season long.
It was a problem all season long. So continuing with Nick Suzuki, you know, he's kind of asked, and the big question now is, so what's the status of the rebuild at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot different time when I signed, and then a year later we're in the full rebuild. So you know, things change fast in this league, and I've learned that. And you know, our rebuild's been faster than most people thought. So you know, it's exciting, and you know, to make the playoffs this early into it is pretty special, and you know, it makes me even more excited for what the future has for us.
So the rebuild has progressed faster than the outside world certainly thought. And that's been exciting, according to making the playoffs particularly. But again, don't get seduced by that, and don't veer away from your plan, I would suggest.
And so the next natural question for the captain was, okay, so is the rebuild over?
I don't think so. I mean, we got a ton of picks, ton of young guys coming up. Who knows how that's going to turn out, and you know, what kind of players they're going to become. So, you know, it's a process. It's you know, every year is going to be different, and you know, it's on, you know, Kent and Courts and those guys to try to put the best team out there that they can, and you know, us players go out and do our job.
So getting into the playoffs and getting through the playoffs are two different things. And I think even the most cheerleading type of Habs fan would say the Canadiens lineup has some big holes in it. And those will primarily be filled. Yes, some free agents can be signed, but primarily that's got to be filled through the young players that are coming up, and Nick Suzuki acknowledged that they have draft picks, they have capital to use, and they have young players that are coming up, and those have to be worked into the lineup, and you can't really accelerate that part of the process.
It's always a flurry of activity on exit interview day. The Canadians even had two different camera feeds going live because everything kind of happens all at once. Yes, the players trickle out after their interviews, but sometimes you've got multiple guys in there at once. It's jammed with journalists. So Lane Hutson, I think I saw it. I don't know if it was the Canadians that tweeted it or not, but first guy who always comes to the rings, first guy who was there to take the podium on Friday at Broussard, that was Lane Hutson. And there was a couple of journalists there to talk to him, Rick.
And as you said, the Lane Hutson station was only comprised one half of the locker room. And at the same time, Christian Dvorak he arrived a little bit later than Lane Hutson. As you said, Lane Hutson was first, but that there was two stations going. And at Lane Hutson station, there were, according to TVI Sport, 21 journalists, 6 videographers, and 5 photographers. And then there was a bunch more over at the other position. And Hutson stayed and patiently answered questions for 17 minutes. Yes, that's a long time for a single player to do that. And he was standing on a box.
Well, you know, he's got to feel like the king of his domain.
Yeah, and there was 30 some odd people around.
They need to be able to see those videographers and photographers need to be able to see him. So, the interesting quote here from out of that 17 minutes from Lane Hutson is Nick Suzuki alluded to this a moment ago in one of the quotes that we just heard from him about how there's more prospects coming up, young guys that are going to be developing, coming into the lineup, and Lane Hutson also honed in on that item as well.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's a special place to play, and you know, having our young core and having all these guys who are still coming up, I think it's only going to get younger from here, and you know, we're just excited about what the future can hold.
So we have our young core. Mm-hmm. And who would that be? Well, it's
himself. I think himself.
Yeah, he's part of it. Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, Caden Gooley,
Slavkovsky,
Demidov has joined that group. To be added at a future date would be Jacob Fowler. So they have the young core, and as he said, we still have some young guys coming up to be added to this group. So we're only going to get younger, and I think that's the crucial part of the summer is getting younger and being okay with that, because mm-hmm. getting younger means that you're following the rebuild plan. Why are they getting younger? Well, there's older players that are going to be on their way out. Who's leaving? David Savard. David Savard announced, and we talked about it extensively last week, announced that at the end of the season, he was retiring retiring from hockey. Savard has said he would like a role with the Canadiens, perhaps a Paul Byron kind of role.
Probably.
But he is one of the older veterans, and he will not be back next season.
He was very emotional on the ice after the series was done.
Oh, absolutely. And the team all rallied around him. And it reminded me of it wasn't public at the time, but the same thing happened with Shea Weber at the end of the Stanley Cup final when the Canadiens lost and all the players gathered around Shea Weber. So listen, everybody had wonderful things to say about David Savard. Nick Suzuki called him a very classy person. And David Savard has left an imprint on the younger players, but it's time to for them to stand on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And David Savard, you know, hockey has passed him by, and perhaps he can be, you know, valuable in some other way other than being on the ice. But without David Savard, the team is going to get younger. Without a Christian Dvorak, and he's one of those four unrestricted free agents, and there's really no sign that Christian Dvorak's coming back. The team is going to get younger. Christian Dvorak had a pretty good season. Elliot Friedman, I thought, he had an interesting quote. He said, quote, "For a long time, Christian Dvorak was a scapegoat for fans in Montreal. However, by the end of the year, he was a very important player on the team. This summer, he will probably be gone. Now, what are they going to do to find a player that's trusted to take that spot?" And you know, he took all the important faceoffs. They need to develop their own faceoff talent and groom another player in that role. Michael Pezzetta, what can we say? He, you know, the number of games he played, it's pretty obvious. He was a healthy scratch more than he was in the lineup, and his usefulness to the Canadiens is come to an end, and he'll be gone. So with all of that, and younger players coming in to fill the spots, that makes the team getting younger, and that's not a bad thing. You look at the some of the guys that will replace those older players, those veterans. Demidov obviously is going to be one of them. Hopefully, David Reinbacher gets things that he's at full health by the time it comes to training camp. And will there be any others?
There might, well, hopefully there will be. You know, there's Logan Mailloux, there's Owen Beck, has Sean Farrell turned a page? We're going to talk about that in a minute. And this is what we mean by this being a crucial phase of the Canadians needing to go from placeholders to playmakers. We're talking about these guys who are on the way out, who have been serving as placeholders, making way for who is going to now be the permanent new playmakers for the Canadians. And it is time for that change and that changeover to happen. So when you talk about getting younger next season, Rick, you found a great quote from Nick Suzuki about the concept of them getting younger next season.
Yeah, this was not one that the Canadians, you know, they only post a few minutes of the media availability. So this one was said off camera, but a very important one, because Nick Suzuki gives his feelings on the Canadians getting younger next season. Suzuki says, quote, "I think that's the biggest question right now." Absolutely, Nick. It's the absolute biggest question, most crucial question about whether they'll get younger. And he goes on to say, "As one of the leaders on the team, we don't want to see this go backwards in any way. Obviously, we have a lot of top picks, a lot of talent, a lot of young guys that are trying to earn roster spots. But we were already the youngest team to make the playoffs, and technically we might get younger next year. We'll see. I think whatever's in the cards for Gortz and Kent this summer, I think we made it a lot harder on them to try and go out and not get younger next year." Very interesting. You know, I think that Nick Suzuki is kind of conflicted about that. But getting younger is part of the rebuild. Getting younger is part of the moving from placeholders to that group, that core, the playmakers, the elite players. And if they try to take any shortcuts, if management tries to accelerate the rebuild, they're likely going to make mistakes. Do we have examples? I think, yes, you do. They tried to accelerate the rebuild. They took shortcuts and brought in Doc and Newhook, and those have not been successes.
No, they have not been successes. And, you know, it's painful. We said this, 3 years ago? this is going to be a painful process in terms of patience. And there's going to be times that it's going to feel like, okay, we've been through enough pain. Let's just charge forward full speed ahead. And that's when Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon have to have the wherewithal to pull back on the reins a little bit and say, we get it and we hear you, but we have to stay the course. And as you said, getting younger is part of the rebuild. And, you know, maybe guys like Suzuki are starting to get a little bit of that, you know, now that they're not the youngest guys on the team, now that they've got a couple of years under their belt and they're starting to be, you know, get more experience. And so, maybe they're starting to get some of that, hey, we don't need any more young guys syndrome, you know, nobody, that kind of thing. But it's all part and parcel. There are going to be more young prospects that are going to come into the lineup.
And Suzuki, just to further that, Suzuki made a quip that I don't want this rebuild to go on past more than 7 years past my contract because I want to be here and take part of it. So you can see what's on his mind.
We understand
exactly
that.
What you said.
Yeah.
And of course he's exaggerating when he talks about it going 7 years. But that's the kind of thoughts that are going through his mind.
And that's all part of them needing to understand that, yes, they have their personal goals. They're going through the pain and going through the rebuild, and they're laying the foundation and they're helping the team to grow, and they want to reap the rewards from it. But at the end of the day, it's not about what the individual players want. It's what is best for the franchise to be perennial contenders without a question. And that's what they're working towards. And they made a big stride this year, but they're not there yet. Caden Gooley, however, had his own interesting perspective on this whole whether or not the team is going to get younger next year thing.
I think Caden Gooley is absolutely one of the leaders of the team. And he's shown it in his play on the ice and in these statements that he makes about the team. As far as getting younger, he said, quote, "You look at the average age, it's tough. We're going to lose some guys, but everyone in this room is getting older. I don't know, maybe the average age goes down, but in terms of me, for example, I'm getting older. Cole, Susie, guys that have been in the league for a long time now and are able to step up and take over this veteran kind of presence, I just think it's on the younger guys now, I guess, to step up in that sense." And I think that's a brilliant comment saying, yeah, you can look at stats, the average age, you can do a calculation, but wait a minute, that doesn't really capture our group here, because we have been young guys who have been together and grown up together and been given responsibility ahead of our time. But we're all that group, that core group, we're getting older. And it's time for us to, regardless of whatever calculation you do of average age, it's up to us now to take over, take control. Brilliant comment and brilliant insight from Caden Gooley, and certainly answers, if someone's looking, oh, well, we better add an older veteran, we better add a Sidney Crosby to get our average age number up, you know. Not that it wouldn't be good to add Sidney Crosby, the example. I think that Caden Gooley's really hit on something here.
Young guys eventually become the veterans, and you don't have to be a 30-year-old player to be a veteran. Young guys become the veterans eventually, and that means there needs to be new crops of young guys to take their place as the young guys. That's just the never-ending cycle and evolution of the hockey team, and yes, I think Caden Gooley is well aware of that.
And the Canadians need that talent. They need that while they're able to pick early and get the talent before they're at the back of the first-round draft. They need to add elite talent, and they need to add more elite talent. And that comes with, unless you're going to pay an arm and a leg, that comes with young players.
So with, we'll see the number of placeholders that make their exit this summer. Things will now, as we mentioned at the top of the show, passing the torch to the new Canadiens core now, which is really, and Rick kind of went through this a minute ago, Canadiens core is now going to be Nick Suzuki, Lane Hutson, Ivan Demidov, Cole Caulfield, Juraj Slafkovský, Caden Gooley. Jacob Fowler is going to join that group in the future. And there might be even more, as you said, Rick. There's more than that coming.
Yeah. Could Michael Hage join that group? Could he be the second line center that is going to be part of the core? The Canadiens will need some interim solution at second line center till then. But those are going to be the core players. So what does that say about other players? Patrick Laine, was he meant to be part of the group that's going to be a perennial contender? No, he was a placeholder. Mike Matheson, he's a placeholder. The Canadiens have their power play quarterback. They have their puck moving defenseman in Lane Hutson. Do they need another one that's a step or two or three or four behind Lane Hutson? What purpose does Mike Matheson serve now? The Canadiens, you know, they probably needed some big punishing defenseman in the series. Mike Matheson doesn't fill that role, and Lane Hudson's not going anywhere, so it kind of makes Mike Matheson a placeholder, makes him redundant. Jaden Struble's a big, strong guy who plays like a pussycat. He doesn't have the edge of Caden Gooley, say, a meanness about him. Mm-hmm. So is Jaden Struble just been a placeholder? Sam Montembeau, a placeholder. Absolutely. So this is going to come with some hurt feelings by Canadiens fans because they've grown attached to the placeholders. And the thing is that the management can't become attached. Of course, you know, they have been to a certain extent. Kent Hughes was Mike Matheson's agent and whatnot. So there is an attachment. But I just got to ask, was Sam Pollock sentimental when making decisions about his players?
No.
In the dynasty years of the Montreal Canadiens? Is Julien Brisebois... is he currently, if you watch the way that Tampa runs things, there's no sentimentality there. When a player has exhausted his usefulness, they move on with maybe no hard feelings, but they move on. And I just, you know, I got to ask Canadiens fans, do you want the exhilaration of a Stanley Cup, or do you want warm, fuzzy feelings of a good news story attached to some of these media darlings and fan favorites? There's going to be some pain in saying goodbye to some of these placeholders, and that is part of the rebuild, and that has to happen for the Canadiens to have a hope of winning a Stanley Cup.
And that's the goal, right? That is supposed to be the goal. That is what you go through all of the pain for, is that at the end of the pain, there is the real potential for a Stanley Cup parade to come back to Montreal. And it has been entirely too long since that has happened. So stay the course. You don't want to not stay the course, divert from the course for that instant gratification, short-term gratification. And then that fizzles after a season and you have to start the rebuild process all over again. You don't want to do that. You want to keep going. You want to push through it and you'll be rewarded eventually. Fans, investors, players, management, coaches, you'll be rewarded eventually, but you just got to stay the course. So this week we have a twofer on the Canadiens Connection question of the week. It's a two-part question, and we want you to put your thinking caps on. We really want your responses on this, so get them in. First part of the question is, how do you feel about the Canadiens' team identity after watching them battle a top-tier opponent like the Washington Capitals in that series? How do you feel about the team's identity after watching them battle a top-tier opponent like the Washington Capitals, in that playoff series? And then the second part of the question that we want to know is, what was the biggest lesson that the Canadians should take from that series? So how do you feel about their identity in the series against the Caps? And what do you think the biggest lessons the Canadians need to take from that series should be? I think this will come with some fascinating responses from our listeners and our viewers. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you think about those two things, and we want to be able to read them next week on the show. So be sure you get your responses in. 5853-ROCKET is how you can text them to us. Again, that's 5853-ROCKET. Drop us a comment on YouTube. That's an easy place to leave a response. Hit us up on social media at Habs Connection. You can leave a response there. If it's a lengthy response, just email us hello@rocketsportsmedia.com. How do you feel about the team's identity after watching them battle a top-tier opponent in the playoffs? And what was the biggest lesson the Canadians should take from that series? Can't wait to see what you have to say. After we take this final short break here on the show, we have a response to last week's question of the week that you're not going to want to miss. So stick around. You're listening to the Canadians Connection podcast on Rocket Sports Radio.
Ready to win some real cash during the basketball playoffs? Check out Pick 6 from DraftKings. When it comes to basketball payouts, DraftKings Pick 6 posterizes the competition, including prize picks. Hit all your picks and score higher minimum payouts on Pick 6, plus even more cash if you outscore the competition. Pick 6 is available in most states, including Missouri, California, Texas, Georgia, and more. New players get $50 in Pick 6 credits instantly on just a $5 entry. So download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to play $5, get $50 in Pick 6 credits. Better payouts, bigger wins, only with Pick 6 from DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 credits that expire in 14 days. Limited time offer. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
And welcome back to episode 346 of the Canadians Connection podcast on Rocket Sports Radio. We're so glad that you're here with us this week. It's the first week of the episode of the off season. And as Rick said at the top of the show, we'll be here all summer long. We're not going anywhere. The hockey is almost an all year round thing these days. So there is always news and really interesting and exciting things to talk about. So we are not going anywhere. You should not go anywhere. Make sure you hit subscribe. You don't ever want to miss an episode because we've got lots and lots coming up for you all throughout the off season. And in fact, Rick, before we get to last week's question of the week and responses, we actually have some exciting news to launch us into the off season, and that is a brand new way for people to follow our written content here at Rocket Sports. All of our written content about the Montreal Canadiens has a new home. If you want to talk to our listeners about it a little bit.
For sure. We're always looking for new ways of getting our content to you, making it very accessible in whatever form you like to receive it. And of course, you can find it on all the social media channels, and you can find it on our Substack, our Rocket Sports Substack, our popular YouTube channel. And now we partnered with a group, and these are made up of former NHLers and some experienced journalists and beat writers that we've worked with for years. And in fact, you're going to recognize some names because we've had them on the podcast for a number of years. But these are people who are just experts in their field, experts for the team that they cover. And we're going to join the group. We're calling the new venture Hockey Hot Stove. It's hockeyhotstove.com. The Hockey Hot Stove, it's a place for storytelling. It's a place for sharing information. It's a place for fans to gather around and make their own comments about what they're seeing with their team. So there is going to be a place for written content. There's going to be a place for podcasts, and there's going to be a forum that you can join, you can register, and you can interact with other fans. And again, that's hockeyhotstove.com, hockeyhotstove.com. If you want to find our own Canadian-specific content, we've made it easy for you. We've set up an address that will take you there directly. It's habshotstove.com, habshotstove.com. So the big launch will be very, very soon, but we've already been putting up content for you there, and you'll have articles by us. You'll have Chris G, his notepads, and all of our content. We'll have a link for our podcast there as well. You can listen to our podcast on the site. Go to hockeyhotstove.com.
Absolutely. Very excited. Great group of guys that are putting all of this together. We're very proud to be a part of this, getting off the ground at its first stages, and we know it's going to be a great resource for hockey fans all across the league, no matter what team you support. All right, so don't forget, send in your responses for the Canadians Connection question of the week, two-part. How do you feel about the team's identity after watching them battle the Washington Capitals, a top-tier opponent in the playoff series? And second part of it, what was the biggest lesson that the Canadians should take from the playoff series? Now, last week, the question that we asked you was, which player has shown the most heart and character during the series against the Caps in your eyes? And this is while the series was still in play, still ongoing. And so we had a lot to choose from. However, we spent a little more time on our second segment this week. So we're just going to, hear from a frequent replier, and that is our YouTube, subscriber at centerheist7948. He says, LOL, you're right. Very happy that the Habs snapped the brooms. This was in response to the fact that he had predicted that the Habs might get swept in the series, and they didn't. He says, as far as the best player for grittiness, Anderson is first, Galley is second, Heinemann is third.
Heinemann was great in the
series. Heinemann was very good in the series. And Gouley was fourth. Dvorak's fifth. And it's a shame that Jacki was not in the first two games because he's sixth in toughness due to only being injected in game three. The sad thing is I was disappointed we had no answer for Tom Wilson. I think Marty St. Louis has affected the impact Jacki could have had. And you do have to, I'm going to pause this for a second just to say, how would this series have been different had Jacki started game one and game two? Could it have been different? Would it have been different? We'll never know. But it's an interesting question mark.
And Jacki was a little tame. There's something about being disciplined and not taking foolish penalties, but he was... he was not timid, not at
no.
all. But he was restrained,
yes.
Let's say. And I think that's what Centerheist is getting at here.
Yeah, I think so. He goes on to say, great show. P.S. I forgot Suzuki, who in toughness I would have put in a tie for fourth, and that would have been tied with Gouley for fourth. So thank you, Centerheist. That's a great reply. Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of heart and character on display in that series. A lot of guys really stepped up. We are sad to see the Canadiens' 2024-25 season come to an end, but we are excited about what's to come. We are excited about what is in store for us here at Rocket Sports and Hockey Hot Stove's launch in the next upcoming days and weeks. We are very excited for Habs fans about what's going to happen now in the off season, and we are very excited that this is really one of the most exciting times to be following the podcast is in the off season. Because here at Canadians Connection, we just really enjoy getting into all of the details of the things that go on in the sphere of the Montreal Canadiens when it's not time to play hockey. So
let me add one more.
Sure.
Let's be excited about the Canadiens, the prospects of the Canadiens who are in the playoffs.
Well, that's true.
All of the attention now focuses on Laval and Trois-Rivières, and Chris G has you covered there.
Yeah, he does.
He's at all the action there, and we're obviously going to be talking about Canadiens prospects and the experience that they're going to gain over this playoff run.
Definitely. So lots to be tuning in for each and every week. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, make sure you hit that notification bell as well. Because we know it's summertime, you're going to get it's not summertime yet, but it's getting there. You're going to get busy. You might forget to check in. So hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. Hopefully you're all going to gather around for the NHL draft lottery, 7 o'clock Monday night. We'll see how that goes with its new look this year. And then we will meet you back here next Saturday, May 10th, for the next episode of the Canadians Connection podcast. Can't wait to see you there. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you again next week.
Click subscribe so you never miss an episode of Canadians Connection. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Rocket Sports.